Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Skulk of Foxes by Helen Harper, narrated by Gabrielle Baker. Chapter 1. It was the beeping that told me I wasn't dead, unless hell had a special section set aside where you were driven mad by the incessant sound of human technology. It was unlikely. I groaned and tried to turn onto my side to get away from the sound, which was starting to feel like it was reverberating around my skull. As soon as I shifted, however, there was a clink of metal upon metal, and I realised I couldn't move. I opened my eyes and glanced down. Gaspard Lickens, I was in a hospital bed, and not only that, I was cuffed to it so I couldn't escape. If it weren't for the pervasive smell of antiseptic, it would have been kinky.
Welcome back to the land of the living.
I glanced to my left, spotting the white-coated doctor who wasn't quite able to meet my eyes.
What?
I croaked.
What happened?
You pulled out a gun in the city centre and tried to use it,
he said. It wasn't a wise action on your part. If anything, I'd say it was quite mad. Well, I thought, wishing I didn't hurt quite so much, I was the Mad Hatter.
You're healing remarkably quickly.
The police shot you. The bullet missed your heart by centimetres. All the same, the shock alone would have killed a normal person. You are some sort of medical miracle. You should be glad. I was beyond thrilled. I looked around.
Where are my clothes?
And more to the point, where was the sphere? The magical one created by a dragon that had the potential to destroy this world? It had been in my possession just before the armed police made their move. If they hadn't impounded everything I owned for forensics and further investigation, then all this had been for naught.
My belongings?
We had to cut you out of your clothes, but we'll rustle up something else for you to wear before you leave. As for your belongings, the police have them. I doubt you'll get them back any time soon.
I breathed out.
Praise be! It had worked.
I'd been out of options. Confronted by Rubus and his minions, suicide by cop had seemed to be the only way to keep the destructive magic out of his hands. Maybe it wasn't my finest hour, but it had served its purpose and the sphere was safe. For now. All I had to do was get the police to arrest me properly and throw me in jail, and the sphere would be locked away as evidence for good, along with me. Then I froze.
Wait a minute!
I half screeched as the doctor's words finally filtered through my fogged brain.
You cut me out of my clothes? Even my sexy arse leather trousers?
He nodded. Yes.
And my gorgeous leather corset?
Yes. I hissed in annoyance. Screw the damn dragon-created apocalypse-inducing magical sphere. I'd look bloody good in that outfit. The doctor looked unconcerned at my fashion-related loss. He pursed his lips slightly before turning to the ivy drip by my side and fiddling with it. I sighed. It was lucky I looked fabulous in just about everything I wore. It would be hard, but I'd get over it, with time.
So, I'm going to be all right?
I asked.
It appears that way, he said.
He glanced at the door.
Your barrister is here to see you. Are you feeling well enough to talk to him?
There was a lingering cloud of confusion misting my mind, but I nodded anyway. When the doctor exited and Morgan appeared in his place, I almost cried.
You're a bloody idiot, Madrona,
Morgan said, striding over to my bedside and grabbing my hand.
Yeah, I sniffed. And it seems like I've got a bartender as a lawyer, too.
He smiled slightly, although it didn't reach his eyes.
They are only going to keep you here until you're well enough to be moved to prison. You're being investigated on suspicion of murder, as well as discharging a firearm illegally.
His face darkened.
An anonymous source sent them the CCTV clip of you with Charry the Borgle.
I bit my lip. You mean, I whispered,
The CCTV clip of me cutting off Charry's head? I am a murderer, Morgan. I deserve this.
He shook his head. We still don't know what really happened between the two of you. Not to mention the fact that there's no body. Finn and his brothers ensured that. We'll find out what happened and get you out.
The sphere.
The police have it. It's safe for now. I swallowed.
And Rubus? Your evil brother who's seeking to destroy the world? What happened to him?
He was questioned and let go. We all were. I've not seen him since.
Morgan's fingers tightened around mine.
He swore blind the gun had nothing to do with him, and he can be a convincing bastard when he wants to be. The only good thing is that he'll still be recovering from the effects of the Rowan poisoning. I was an idiot for not realizing what he'd done sooner.
I sighed. It was me who gave him the idea. All this is my fault. If I'd not told him that Rowan poisoning enabled me to maintain a glamour for hours rather than minutes, he wouldn't have known. He couldn't have pretended to be Mendax, the damn dragon. We wouldn't have almost handed the stupid sphere over to him.
If it wasn't for you, Morgan said, this domain would already have been destroyed. You're a hero.
Well, there was that. I knew that part all along.
I half smiled.
I'm truly wondrous.
Morgan held my gaze. One day you'll realise that's actually true.
He leaned over and brushed my lips with his.
The police want to question you. We'll need to work out what you're going to say.
I tried to shrug, although it was remarkably awkward from the position I was in. I know what I'm going to say, I said.
I attempted a weak grin.
Morgan raised a questioning eyebrow. I've got amnesia, I whispered to him. I can't remember a gas-bud-licking thing.
I'm not sure that's much of a defence. His expression was grim. We can't afford for you to be locked up for a quarter of a century for murder.
We?
I inquired.
Or you?
His eyes held mine. I think you already know the answer to that.
I ignored the momentary ripple of delight in the pit of my stomach and lowered my voice. But I deserve to be locked up, Morgan. I did decapitate that bogle. The video proves it. And more to the point, I added, if I'm locked up, then so is the sphere.
I'd barely finished speaking when there was a sharp knock at the door. Whoever was outside didn't bother to wait to be granted access, however, so the knock was a wasted effort. Morgan growled at the sight of the sharp-suited couple holding up their badges. Apparently he and they were already acquainted.
"I told you,"
he said, with a protective air that made my toes curl in delight.
"I require some time alone with my client first. She's only just woken up and she's in a position of extraordinary vulnerability. This is not the place for an interrogation."
"Perhaps," the woman said. "She should have thought of that before threatening the city of Manchester."
Morgan's face darkened.
"All she did was fire a gun into the air."
"An illegal gun."
He held his ground.
"It didn't belong to her. She took it from her assailant. It was self-defence."
"All the more reason for us to talk to her,"
the woman's partner replied calmly. "We need to keep her safe."
"By handcuffing her to a hospital bed?"
"It's just procedure.
Besides, there's also the question of the video evidence we've received, and her confession at the crime scene in front of the library. She said she had already killed."
"Video evidence that could easily have been doctored," Morgan returned. "And she was under great duress when she said that."
The three of them were putting on quite a show. Under any other circumstances, I'd probably have been rather entertained.
I tried to scoot upwards to make myself more comfortable, but the authorities obviously weren't taking any chances. The handcuffs were far too tight, and all I could manage was to shift up an inch or two on the pillow. I shook my head from side to side in a bid to look like the glamorous sex kitten I knew I was, adorably mussed up after a long sleep, instead of pale, chained up, and with bed hair.
Neither of the police officers appeared impressed. I suspected they were simply jealous.
"In any case," the policeman said, "you have no right to be here."
I blinked. "I can leave?"
He rolled his eyes. "Not you." He jerked his chin at Morgan. "Him. We have searched and found no one on the barrister's register to match you. You're not a lawyer. Therefore," the officer smiled unpleasantly, "you have to go."
"She is entitled to legal representation."
"Then go find some."
Morgan opened his mouth to argue some more. It was rather heartening given that, not all that long ago, he'd have quite happily allowed the police to lock me away forever. All the same, I interrupted him before he could begin his tirade. It was for his own good. He'd only feel bereft and useless when I talked my way into a life sentence without his help. "It's fine, Morgan," I said softly. "I'll deal with this. I'll answer their questions. You stay focused on Rubus and what he's planning." Neither police officer would have made a great poker player. Their stoic expressions cracked when I mentioned Rubus's name.
Aha.
I smiled serenely.
I was an uber-villain. I deserved to be locked away. But if I could bring Rubus down with me, you could bet my curvy, gorgeous ass that I'd do it.
After Morgan reluctantly departed and the door closed firmly behind him, I fixed my attention on the police.
"He did have a point," I said. I jiggled the handcuffs. "I have no lawyer and I'm completely vulnerable and helpless. This is not a good place for an interrogation."
"We're not going to interrogate you here," the policewoman told me. "We're just here to find out what happened. You're very welcome to get legal advice before we proceed, but, honestly, we're on your side. This is merely an exploratory chat."
"Exploratory? Then you're saying you're like Christopher Columbus?"
She appeared slightly discomforted.
"Not exactly, but because he was an incompetent tyrant."
I raised an eyebrow. "I've not had dealings with the police in the past, but I'd rather hope for better than that." Rather than unbalancing my pair of PC plods, they both seemed to brighten.
Uh-oh. Maybe I did have direct experience with the arm of the law. It was entirely possible. Thanks to my ongoing amnesia, I couldn't remember.
"I can assure you that we are not tyrants."
The policeman smiled, as if he were my brand new best friend. That could not be a good thing.
"Let's start over, shall we? I'm Detective Inspector Mulroney, and this is Detective Constable Jones."
The policewoman smiled thinly.
"Our records indicate that you are Madrona Hatter."
I beamed. I couldn't help myself. "Madrona Hatter? That's awesome." Then I realised what I'd said.
"What I mean is, yes."
I coughed. "I am Madrona Hatter."
"Where are you from, Madrona?"
Mulroney's expression was friendly enough, but there was something about his tone of voice that gave me pause.
Is that relevant?"
"You're not registered as a British citizen. Neither is there any information at border control about which country you arrived from. Are you here illegally?"
I stared at him. Before I could answer, DC Jones stepped in to tag-team him.
"You've been in trouble before now, Madrona. Antisocial behaviour."
I spluttered.
"I'm a very social person. Everyone who meets me loves me."
That was a blatant lie. Oh well, she wasn't to know that.
"Drunk and disorderly?"
"Being drunk is a crime? Come on."
"Public disorder?"
I shook my head.
"You've got the wrong person. Ordering the public around is very important to me."
Jones was not amused.
"That is not what public disorder refers to. There is a litany of petty crimes attached to your name, but we haven't been able to follow up on any of them because you're an illegal immigrant who thinks she's above the law. Is that correct?"
I considered possible responses. Really, there was only one way to go. The truth. The whole truth. And nothing but the truth.
I thought I was above the law for a few days, I agreed. That's because I thought I was a superhero.
It's not true, though. I've got amnesia, so I don't remember my background or where I came from. However, I have it on good authority that I'm really a fairy. I come from a place called Magmel, and I've got special magical powers. So I probably am here illegally, but, you see, I can't leave. Magmel is closed off. No fairies can return. Like it or not, I'm stuck here.
I tried to shrug, but it wasn't easy, given my supine position. I'd go home if I could.
Mulroney didn't blink. Maybe he was actually a lizard rather than a man.
Frankly, these days nothing would surprise me.
You're telling us that you have amnesia? He said.
Yes.
And that you're a fairy?
Yes.
But you're trapped here?
Yes.
And you have magical powers?
I beamed. Now you're getting it?
He leaned down. Tell me, Madrona. Do these magical powers extend to the ability to chop off someone's head? Because we have evidence that's what you did.
I don't remember anything about that.
Because you've got amnesia.
Yes. Mulroney shook his head sadly. I thought you were going to help us, Madrona. Instead, you're just being obstructive. As soon as the doctors agree that you're well enough to be released, which I believe will be very soon, you will be arrested on suspicion of murder and serious public affray. You do not have to say anything, but it may harm your defence if you do not mention when questioned something you later rely on in court. Anything you do say may be given in evidence.
I did my best to look crestfallen, but it wasn't easy. This was what I wanted. Being locked up in prison meant that the sphere would also be locked up in an evidence room somewhere so that Rubus couldn't get his grubby hands on it. The world was lucky that I was such a self-sacrificing person. I just hoped that prison food was going to be palatable. I'd keep my fingers crossed for kebabs.
Chapter 2. Part of me expected to be shoved into an orange jumpsuit after a brisk cavity search, and then sent to a large grey building with lots of bars where my only exercise would be swinging a pickaxe at chunks of rock and avoiding eye contact in the showers. It was almost disappointing when I was taken straight from the hospital to nowhere more interesting than a police station. That was nothing compared to the baggy jeans and boring T-shirt that were forced on me before I left the hospital. If it had been a month or two earlier, and a few degrees warmer, I'd have simply strolled out naked. Instead, I suffered the indignity of looking like everyone else. My rights were read to me again, presumably on the off chance I'd had another bout of amnesia in the past hour, before I was deposited on an uncomfortable aluminium chair in a small interrogation room. The fact that the chair was bolted to the floor wasn't lost on me. It was good that the police were wary of me. It made putting up with more questioning slightly more palatable. Small mercies, I reminded myself. If this was what it took to get the coppers to lock me up and throw away the key, this was what I'd have to do. The first person to enter the room wasn't another police officer, however. It was a slim, middle-aged woman with fiery green eyes.
"Don't get up," she told me.
I'm cuffed to the chair by my ankles, I said. I couldn't get up even if I wanted to. And believe me, I don't want to.
Viburna grimaced. We'd only met once before, when I was trapped in the body of a large bearded man, and she'd used truth-draw magic to find out who I really was.
I hadn't liked the Fey woman much then. Somehow, I didn't think my feelings were going to change now. She took the adjacent chair, although I noted that she angled herself away from me as if she were afraid that I'd contaminate her with my very presence. Our dislike was mutual, then. This was going to be fun.
"I will represent you," she said. "Unlike Morganus, I am actually registered as a barrister. I've been a practicing lawyer for several years now, and I deal with a lot of fey and human criminal deeds. The police will take no issue with me."
"What if I take issue with you?" I inquired. She gestured as if it were no concern of hers. "That's your right." I peered at her. I had the impression she was hoping that was exactly what I would do. "You heard then," I said, "about what I did?" "You mean that it's your fault we are all trapped here? That you were the one who forced the borders between this domain and our own to be closed?" Her voice was cold. "Yes, I heard. But it will not hinder my ability to do my job, if that's what you're worried about." Morgan and Artemisia weren't bothered by the revelation. In fact, they were almost relieved to learn the truth. Viburna didn't miss a beat. They are entitled to their opinion. I couldn't stop myself from grinning. It was quite something to realise that I had inspired absolute revulsion and hatred in another person. Most people garnered apathy and ambivalence. Not me. I was too cool for that. "Well," I said, "your job in this scenario is to ensure that I'm properly locked away." The fey woman blinked in surprise. "Pardon?" I waved a hand. "You heard me. We have to keep the sphere away from Rubus. As long as I'm in jail, that's exactly what will happen. Given that the police are already onto him, I doubt that even Rubus will try to sneak his way in here to nab it. It's my job to keep it as far away from him as possible."
"You're martyring yourself?"
Viburna asked with a doubtful and rather disparaging sneer. "I want the songs," I said. Her brow furrowed. "Excuse me?" "The songs. All good martyrs have songs written about them. Once they've thrown away the key, I expect you, as my lawyer, to contact right said Fred." "What on earth are you on about?" Clearly, human pop culture was beyond Viburna's frame of reference. "Right said Fred? They're a British pop duo. Their original hit, I'm Too Sexy, could easily be reworked for me. I'm even prepared to help them out with the lyrics. Or if Right Said Fred are too busy, perhaps the specials could rewrite Free Nelson Mandela for me." I pursed my lips. "It's a good tune." I'd managed to flummox her into momentary silence by comparing myself to Mandela. Unfortunately, she recovered quickly. "Morganus wants me to ensure your release," she said, ignoring my musical suggestions. "He'll have to manage without me. You have to ensure that my release doesn't happen." For the first time, Viburna smiled. "If you insist. But you can't tell the police you're guilty and end up in prison just like that. They're still going to want to ask questions. A lot of questions. We probably don't want to appear too eager to get you charged with the crimes either, or they'll suspect something is up. Generally speaking, people who are keen to end up in jail are hiding more than they let on. The police and the world at large are far happier if you at least pretend to put up a fight. You will also be more convincing if you actually tell the truth. Within reason, of course." I inclined my head. "I bow to your wisdom." I paused. "Metaphorically, I mean. I'm not actually going to bow to you. And I'm not yet convinced by your wisdom." "The feeling's mutual," she grunted. She got to her feet, walked to the door and knocked on it. When it opened, she told the duty officer outside that we were ready. I rubbed my palms in anticipation. I'd played a lot of roles in recent times. This one might prove to be my best yet. Jones and Mulroney ambled inside, taking the chairs on the opposite side of the table. Jones took out a digital recorder and placed it between us. I made as if to reach for it, and she glared at me.
"Not a gift for me, then?" I asked. Her glare increased.
"For the purposes of the tape," Mulroney said, "present in the room are myself, D.I. Mulroney, and D.C. Jones."
"Good morning," Jones said.
"Representing Ms. Hatter is..."
Viburna cleared her throat. "Viburna Smith, QC.
Mulroney gestured at me. "Please state your full name." I deepened my voice to a villainous half-cackle. "Madrona Hatter." I inhaled deeply, holding the stale air inside my lungs.
"I'm guilty of murder. I confess. I did it. I deserve whatever happens next."
"You admit to murder?" Viburna muttered under her breath, obviously annoyed that I'd ignored all her instructions.
"Yes?"
I nodded vigorously. Unfortunately, Mulroney and Jones's disbelief at my immediate confession was so obvious that I began to suspect Viburna had been right. My rush to admit my guilt merely raised doubts rather than dispersing them. I had to backtrack somehow. If I made matters too easy for them, they'd remain suspicious. People like to work a bit to get what they want because it makes the desired outcome much sweeter when it arrives. I should have realised that earlier, or Viburna should have explained it more clearly. I was fortunate that Mulroney gave me the opening I needed.
"I thought you had amnesia," he said.
"Yes," I nodded wisely. "I don't remember killing anyone, but I don't remember not killing anyone either." I raised my shoulders helplessly. "I'm a danger to the public. Send me to prison." Mulroney sighed. Rather than ending the proceedings because of my botched confession, he started with his other questions.
"Miss Hatter, please explain what brought you to the vicinity of the Manchester Library on Monday, 8th of October."
I sank back in my chair. I would have to try a lot harder than I'd thought to get these two to charge me properly. Didn't they know who I was? Couldn't they spot my dangerous edge? I twisted my lips into a snarl and did my best to help them along. I'd heard that Rubus, a local drug dealer, was going to be there and that he was up to no good. Plus, I wanted some drugs. Viburna shot me a narrow-eyed look.
"What is the alleged drug dealer's full name?"
I shrugged.
"Rubus, evil bastard. I don't know his last name. I just know that he was going to be there doing bad things."
It was sort of the truth. When he didn't do what I wanted, I wrestled a gun from him.
"Wrestled?"
"Well," I said, "someone knocked him to the ground and the gun he was holding fell with him. I took it. It was almost a wrestle." I smiled nicely. "Then once I had it, I shot it."
"At who?"
"I think the question you want to ask is, at whom?"
Jones drummed her fingers on the table in irritation.
Good. I wanted her to despise me. It was the easiest way to get this all done and dusted.
"I guess you were off school that day," I said. "Anyway, I shot the gun into the air. I wasn't aiming at anyone."
I felt Viburna relax slightly now that I was doing what she told me to do. Even Jones appeared placated. Given that my actions could have well have been filmed, just like my murder of Charry was, I didn't feel like I could say anything else.
"You also shouted something. What did you shout?"
"I have killed before," I intoned, "and I shall kill again."
Mulroney leaned forward.
"What did you mean by that?"
I frowned.
"Which words don't you understand?"
"Who would you kill before?"
A sudden knot of unexpected and very real tension tightened in my chest.
"I don't remember. As I keep saying, I have amnesia, but I think I might have killed a man called Charry. I believe you have evidence that proves I did just that."
At a nod from Mulroney, Jones took out a photo from a brown envelope and slid it across the table. I immediately recognised it. It was indeed a still from the golf course CCTV footage, the footage that proved once and for all that I'd killed Charry by cutting off his head with a sword. I bit my lip. "This was what I wanted," I reminded myself.
"Yeah," I said. "I think that's him."
"Good," she said, obviously pleased. "We have his wife and children next door." The last of my well-intentioned lock-me-up-now bluster flew out of the window with all the speed of a buzzard on crack.
"What?"
My mouth felt dry.
"Wife and children?"
Sample complete. Ready to continue?